Hey there, what are you exuding? Are you exuding confidence? How about wholeness, faith, or prosperity? Whether you are radiating greatness or trying to get there, you're in the right place. I'm Alicia Renee, and welcome to the She Exudes Now podcast. Hello, and welcome to the She Exudes Now podcast, a space where we discuss topics for today's woman to educate, encourage, and motivate them to heal, be more faithful, to build confidence, and to live their best lives. I'm your host, Alicia Renee, a Christian author, life coach specializing in inner healing and confidence for women. And I have a guest today. I'm excited to introduce her and share more about our topic for today. But we are in the month of April, and this is Autism Awareness Month, if you were not aware. And so because of that, I have a special guest today, and we are going to talk about hope for autism parents. And so my guest today, Maria, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. She is an author. She has written a book called Autism and One Mother's Journey Through the Spectrum. And not only is she an author, but she has lived experience dealing with two children that are actually on the spectrum. So, Maria, you have got a wealth of knowledge and experience, and you are just still here being hopeful, being happy,
and trying to
encourage, absolutely, trying to encourage other people to just do the same. And I know that, you know, it's not always easy. So kudos for you and your success so far. And thank you for being on the show.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. So before we jump into the topic, this is the She Exudes Now podcast. And I just want to ask, what are you exuding today?
I'm exuding hope today, of all things. It just happened to fall into place.
Well, that's perfect. It definitely syncs well with our topic for today. And hope is a good thing. You know, we're not always in a place where we're feeling hopeful. We're not always feeling optimistic. So it's a good thing to be exuding that. It's a good thing to have those experiences. For me today, I am going to say just exuding resilience and persistence, as this has been a long week. I know we just started this week, but over the course of the last 7 days, it's been long and lots of things going on. But I've not given up and just pressing forward. So I guess hope and persistence and resilience are kind of related too. You're hoping for the moment that you get a break.
Oh, definitely.
All right. So I mentioned that we are talking about having hope for parents who have children who are on the spectrum. And I mentioned that it is Autism Awareness Month. Let's just talk a little bit before we jump into the detail here. Let's talk about what autism awareness means. You know, from your perspective, you know, what would you want someone who doesn't know anything about autism? What would you want them to know?
Ooh, I guess just, you know, autism, there's the awareness and there's the acceptance. I had a child with autism, a teenager, comment on one of my things that I had posted that for Autism Awareness Month that she corrected me. She was a very sweet young lady. And she said, it is not autism acceptance or autism awareness. It is Autism Acceptance Month. And they have a World Autism Awareness Day. And that's another day. And I'm thinking to myself, I have been living with autism for the better part of almost 18 years. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how I missed that one. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, it just happened.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good point. And as you mentioned that, I began to think about it as well. It seems like in recent years, it's been more so Autism Acceptance Month. Right. And I think that it's probably because in recent years, we have become more knowledgeable about what autism is, what it looks like. We know that it's a spectrum and not one person fits the mold exactly the same way as the next person. And so now it's more of shifting from awareness to acceptance. Are you accepting those individuals that live in society or that live in the homes or go to the schools, the jobs, whatever, with us? Are you accepting them and treating them not the way that you think that they should be treated, but the way that they want to be treated? Are you making way for their differences or, you know, their disabilities even? So I agree. It is more of an acceptance. And it's a chance to not only educate, but to just say, hey, we're all different. Let's rally around these individuals and embrace them and, you know, just learn more about them instead of stereotyping, instead of trying to box them in. Let's just explore more and celebrate them. So that's what it means to me. So I like to take this chance to talk about it. I don't often talk about it, but I would like to share my experience as well. I have a son now. He is 16. He is on the spectrum, and he was diagnosed when he was 3 years old. And the transition between the when he was diagnosed at three to now has been just a whirlwind of change, but it definitely was a process. There have been some ups and a lot of downs, but you know, I'm grateful for where he is, and I know that that's not everyone's story. So I like to be able to exude hope. I like to be able to inspire and just share my experience as well. So thank you, as a fellow mother. Thank you for being willing to share your experience as well.
Yes, it's definitely a journey for sure. You learn that there's even, you know, oh, he's stage three autism, or there were no stages. Mm-hmm. You're diagnosed with autism. And if you were higher functioning, you had Asperger's, and that was
right.
And now there's 5-6 stages, I believe. And like I said, you know, over the last 18 years, I've learned a lot, and then there's still more that I'm learning about it. And it's crazy to me to think how much more they have just done more research, and they fine tuned how they diagnose and treat or, I know you got to be careful with words like, oh, he's being treated because, you know, oh, is there a cure? No, there's no cure.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, there is treatment that helps. And yeah, so.
That's a good point. There's, you know, all these nuances, and you know, it's a sensitive topic for many families because there's a lot of hurt. There's a lot of emotion that's centered around it. But at the end of the day, you know, I think there's more community, there's more similarity in the experiences. And I feel like that's one thing that we should gravitate more towards. But again, you know, there are just a lot of emotions, a lot of thoughts, a lot of theories around the topic. So, of course, people are going to have differences of opinion. So that's the unfortunate part. But so you spoke a little bit about, you know, dealing with it from a parent standpoint for the last 18 years. Can you just talk more about what your experience has been like and what prompted you to write your book?
When my middle son started displaying, you know, autistic tendencies and little quirks and little things like that, it just heightened my awareness. We did our research on it. And of course, this was back in, you know, 2007, and things were still, you know, on the cusp of becoming you know, this big autism thing where it was one in 50 kids or one in 100 kids. And now it's, I don't even know what the statistic is anymore. I've seen so many different ones, but I know it's gotten cut in half, I believe. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we saw that and I just thought, okay, we could get through this. We had him, you know, diagnosed and he was higher functioning. He had Asperger's and he didn't like that. He said, I don't have Asperger's, I have cheeseburgers. And he would turn it into a joke. And yeah, we always cracked up at that one. You know, and then we started getting him. He was a self-harmer. He was suicidal. He's emotional and anxiety ridden. And, you know, even during COVID, he was diagnosed with trauma, the one trauma, whatever. There's so many different words for it. And, you know, he had all that. So we had to deal with all that. And we get him underway with the therapies and the schooling and the best of the best that we could find and where, you know, where we lived. And then our youngest starts displaying these things. You know, even earlier we noticed, you know, since we already had the pre-knowledge through Zoom from my middle. And then Ricky starts displaying these things. So we're like, oh my God, but it's a little different. It's a lot different. They're on complete opposite ends of the spectrum. He's going to be 18 in 2 weeks. And we got him diagnosed with pervasive developmental delay or PM, whatever the PDD or that one is. And that was already back in 2009. And because they couldn't diagnose until the age of five. And then we waited till he was five and a half and got the formal diagnosis. And it was very grim with him. So it wasn't Asperger's, it wasn't high functioning. They gave us little to no hope. They even told us he wasn't going to live past 30, 35 years old. It was a very heart-wrenching moment. I've always been a writer. I was a teacher. That's what my first degree is in. It's education. And I, you know, was certified 1 through 8 and taught the 4th and 5th grade level, junior high level. Then I got my master's in adult learning, and went into the college sector, and I'm even dealing with young adults on the spectrum. So I've learned a lot from that. And I started blogging and journaling and just writing. I would always write things down, just to help me learn how much that they, you know, how far they've come. So I always kind of did that. And someone one day was like, you need to put all this down in a book. You know, you have volunteered for the schools and you've done this and that, and you've helped so many families. You need to put all of this down because it's going to help someone. And if it helps even just one family, that's all that's worth to me. You know, one family is worth it.
Yeah. And you're right. Even if it helps one family, it's worth it because those experiences could help someone else not have to struggle with that, or even to just know that they're not alone. I know for me, when my son was first diagnosed, at that time, he was 3. So we were able to get a diagnosis at 3. And I was just lost. I was devastated and didn't understand why. You know, I got the grim diagnosis as well. And I just didn't know what to do or what was the next step. There was so much information out there, so much available, but yet I didn't know which way to go. And fortunately, I found out about a support group that was in my area. They were meeting not far from where I lived, and I just joined them one night. And that was the best thing that I could have done at that time, because these ladies had children who had already been diagnosed and they were already living the life. And so they quickly embraced me. And, you know, there were moments where, you know, they gave me hugs and I was teary eyed, I was crying, but there were also moments when they said, you know what, we're going to help you get through this. And so here's a few things that you should do. If you need help, you can call me. We can walk through it together. And, you know, that was such a blessing just because I was lost. And so I definitely feel like you need something. You need, you know, if it's a book, if it's community, whatever it is, you need someone to help you on that path. So kudos to you for giving back. That's awesome. So you mentioned that it was grim, and I know too well, you know, that experience. So tell me a little bit about when you went to get the diagnosis, and you can share from either perspective of either sons or both. But what was it like? What were some of the things that you were told that your sons wouldn't be able to do? And are there any things that, you know, didn't hold true that are not true today?
You know, with my middle one, they had given us some hope. But I feel like they never want to give you false hope. So they kind of aim low. That way, if it gets better, then you kind of feel better about it. And I feel like that's how they did it with me and with my middle one. Like I said, he was a self-harmer when he was very young. He was a headbanger, and he would just, if something would go wrong and it wasn't right and he got something, you know, if something didn't go right, he thought he would blame himself. He was very self, he judges himself and has a bar set so high for himself that nothing is good enough, you know, unless it's perfection. He's still that way today at college level. You know, and then as he got older, it just matured into suicidal thoughts, attempts, tendencies. And that's when it scared me the most, when he just heartfelt comes to me and says he doesn't want to live anymore and that he wants to die. No mother wants to hear that. Right. And no mother should have to go through losing their own child. No mother should, especially with this, through this. But through counseling and therapies and just being a loving parent and a loving mother. And he had, you know, he did have the support of his father at the time as well. And we had a small little group of people who supported us. Very small. It's very hard to get people. I found that same group of three or four women through the PTA at their schools. And I just dove into that. And I just clung to them with, you know, for dear life. And I still to this day cling to them for just even just a normal adult conversation. At one point, when you have children that are nonverbal, you know, even my middle one, Zach, he was nonverbal until 6, 7. And he was still mainstreamed and things like that. And he was just pulled out for speech because back then they did not throw you into a self-contained unless you were the lowest of the low. I hate to say it like that. I really do. Just, you know, because that's where Ricky's at now. He is in the self-contained. He has always been in the self-contained, you know, and then with, you know, with him is complete opposite. You know, there's no anxiety. There's no, you know, there's stimming when he gets a little stressed, but we've always called him, you know, as he's gotten older and bigger, he's my Ferdinand the Bull, my gentle giant. And, you know, with him, it was more, he's got the mentality of a newborn. Now, mind you, this is at the age of 5 and a half, almost 6. Wow. With his initial, like the formal big diagnosis that we got. You know, he's got the mentality of a newborn, but certain things that we tested him in, he's between a 9 and a 12 month old. We don't see him getting any further than a age, you know, 3 to 5, maybe 5 to 8 age range. He'll never live past 30 or 35. I mean, they just kept throwing these, these gut wrenching, heart breaking little things at us. We were just like, can you give us a shred of hope? I left there shaking in tears. Thinking it can't be. I didn't do anything wrong. My pregnancy was good. This was good. That was good. We're good with everything. What is going on? And I will say, you know, with that was very difficult, and that took a long time to process and cope with. You know, so when I tell other parents, you know, who have, you know, grim situations, you know, it's easy for one parent to say to another parent, oh, you can't lose hope, and oh, you know, chin up, and you can't say that to us because we look at you like, goodbye, just goodbye. Don't even talk to me. I don't even want to know you. You have no clue what we're going through. You have no idea what it's like. You know, you got one wanting to commit suicide, and you got the other one who wants to wander and jump into, you know, Lake Erie and drown. And that has happened to a friend of ours, you know.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's like that happened. There was a string of children who were drowning. And I got Ricky drown-proofed right away. I got him drown-proofed and I got him swimming lessons, and they were super cheap at the community pool, and they did them before the hours, you know, before they had open hours. And yeah, he was the guy who helped him learn how to swim. He just drown-proofed him, taught him how to get to where he needed to if he found himself, because he was a wanderer. Zach was never a wanderer. Ricky was a wanderer. He would just... So, yeah, there's just so much.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's important for people to know that every child is different, and their families are going to experience something different too. So like you had two in the same household, one child suffered with this or experienced this, but the other child didn't. And so that is stressful in itself, because you have to learn your child, what works for your child. You have to know, you know, the angst and, you know, what things might trigger this child, and be able in your situation to still parent with other children as well. And so, you know, it definitely is a spectrum. And you mentioned one thing about, you know, telling a parent that has a child with special needs, telling them to remain hopeful. It's kind of just like, oh, you know, cliche, like something, you know, someone would say, but it's like, well, how do you remain hopeful when you're going through something, as you mentioned, when your child, and I don't care if your child has a disability or not, but when they are saying that they don't want to live, that is a pretty serious, a pretty heavy weight. And so it's like, how do you tell someone to remain hopeful when they're going through something so difficult? And it is difficult. I think from my perspective, when I've had to learn how to cope, how to give myself hope, it is taking things day by day. And really putting my faith in something that is higher and above any and all things that I'm currently going on. So it's not hoping for this particular situation to go through, to go away, I should say, because it may be a grim situation. There may not be an end in sight anywhere near. But if I can hope and believe in something that's greater, that, for example, that God will walk me through this day, that I will be able to get through this day, that I will be able to, you know, calm my child, or we will be able to get through dinner, whatever it is, just the little things. And when those things happen, then it's okay, I can breathe, I can excel, I can do the next thing. And so for me, that's what hope is. It's just clinging to God when, you know, I can't try to tackle this big, huge thing right now, but it's the little things and being just grateful for those moments. I remember when my child was diagnosed, he was growing and developing just fine. And then all of a sudden he had a loss of words. And we got down to like 10 words or less as a 3-year-old. And just, you know, I felt like we were really just kind of starting all over, you know, just with his understanding of things and, you know, him not being able to communicate what he wants and seeing him be angry because he's trying to express himself, but he just can't get it out. And I have no idea what he's trying to tell me. That's stressful. And I know that, well, I knew that it wasn't going to end that day, but I took one day at a time. And when I look back, you know, a couple years later, and he had a vocabulary of 50 words, I was just grateful. You know, I was like, oh, wow. Okay. Well, not as bad as it was 2 years ago. And then when I look back now at him being 16, I have to tell him to be quiet.
I wish I had to do that with my youngest. It's like, oh,
I want to be quiet. He is doing some amazing things. He's still on the spectrum. So he still struggles with some things. But again, I can look back and I can say, wow, you know, we have really come a long way. And that just gives me hope that it's not as bad as it once seemed. And even if your child has some pretty severe challenges, you know, he's still, he or she is still there, still alive. Yes. And you can take it one day at a time, I should say. Take it one day at a time and find something to cling to help you smile and just get through the day.
I cling to those moments that happen that are funny, that remind me that, mm-hmm. you know, oh my God, they're just a little, you know, they're human and they're, you know, just, they're my kid and I love them. And we just have those moments. And
yeah.
I cling to those moments, the positive moments, the good moments, the funny moments, where my middle one will crack a joke. And I just thought, did he come up with that? Yeah. Sarcasm? Really? And it's so funny. And he makes me smile every day. Or if, like, when Ricky hears someone use profanity or do something that's, you know, not allowed, don't say bad words. And he, you know, don't say bad words. And he says it. And I get to hear that voice. And I don't get to hear that voice often. So I'm constantly encouraging. I'm like, hey, Ricky, what do you think of this? And he just kind of looks at me. Sometimes he'll just walk away and I get nothing. And other times he'll be like, good. I'm like, okay, it's one word. I'll take it. Yep. You know, and sometimes it makes no sense of what I'm asking him, but I just little moments like that'll make me smile. And then I can breathe and say, yes, one day at a time, but they'll let those days blend and then look back on their growth. You know, even if it's just, you know, 1 year wasn't as much as the next, or months weren't as much as, you know, months prior, take those are a win. Because yes, you're going to have times where you feel like they're regressing, summer break, Christmas break, spring break.
Not
fortunate to get them in the extended school year for the summer, which Ricky has always received. Zach did not receive that. Ricky always receives that. So, you know, I cling to those moments because he comes home and he's fun and he loves going. So yeah, definitely cling to even the little moments.
Yeah, absolutely. So those are ways that we can find some hope, even if it's just a little glimmer, just a little piece of hope. Are there any other ways or any other activities or things that you did to help cope with those moments where it's just really rough? Like maybe you just had a rough day and you're tired and you're just not at your best. You know, what do you do to cope?
I would not have made it this far without my structure and my routine. They thrive on it. I thrive on it. Even just the little things of preparing what we're going to have for dinner that day. You know, if we had plans to go see a movie, it's on the calendar. What movie are we seeing? Every little bit, every little detail planned for every day. And some people think it's too much, but let me tell you, I'm more calm, relaxed, less anxiety ridden than normal. But those little things, it helps them stay calm. Helps me stay calm. You know, they're happy. I'm happy. I'm happy. They're happy.
Yeah. Absolutely. You have to do what's good for your family, what works for your family. You know, for another family, being that organized or structured would be more work for them possibly. Yes. And so it may not work for them, but it's what works for you. And so that, that helps you to be able to cope with, you know, the difficult times or the hard times. I would say for me, it has always been my me time when I can get it, particularly when my son would go to sleep.
When you can get it.
It's usually late at night. but, you know, in the early days when he would go to sleep and, you know, I put him to bed, that was my time. So whether I spent that time washing dishes and cleaning up, or if I spent that time watching Netflix, a lot of times in recent years, my thing has been to put on something inspirational. I'll listen to an Audible, so an audiobook or a podcast. because I don't have time to actually sit and read books like I used to many, many years ago. So, but I can do the same thing now with listening to it, and I can multitask. And so that is really, you know, something that I did for myself. So if I had, you know, work I needed to do, I would just listen. Other times it is just, you know, taking a moment to do nothing. That is one of my favorite times. Just do nothing. Whatever comes to mind, if it's just lay in the bed for, you know, an extra hour or two in silence, that was my time. I needed that.
Yes.
I needed just a moment to decompress, to think. And I would often journal, which is how I got into writing devotionals, because journaling was therapeutic for me. Again, it took time out of my schedule to be able to sit and write, but it was something about actually writing and getting my thoughts down on paper that really helped me so much. I would also write down my prayers, and I felt like by writing them and then also speaking them, you know, I just felt like, okay, I'm relinquishing all of this. And it just felt like I was releasing a burden. And that's, you know, that's something that was very important to me, especially being a single mother. You know, I had so much on my plate. And so anytime that I could feel like I could decompress and let things go, that was just an awesome moment for me.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, clinging, one of the things you cling to is, you know, your higher power or, I say this to any parents, you know, whatever you believe in, something to believe in. And I was very angry with God in the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And I found myself having moments where if I had a moment to myself, I'm screaming and crying and just cursing God for doing this to me. Why would he do this to an innocent child, let alone two of them in one household? And then I said to myself, I'm thinking, I'm sitting here and I'm so angry with him, but I'm talking to him.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a higher power, even though I was mad at him. And I've learned, and it's taken a long time. And not a lot of people even know that I pray every day, multiple times. And it has helped me. And it's hard to explain because some people, my oldest is now going through this. I don't know if I believe in God. He has helped me raise his two younger brothers, and he's been through a lot in his young life and had to grow up a little too fast and maybe have a little bit more responsibility with his two younger brothers. And I feel just horrible about that. However, I worry that if he doesn't believe in something, it's going to eat away at him.
Right.
So I'm hoping that he finds something to cling to that gives him hope. And that's, you know, same thing I would tell any other parent, you know, that you're going to have those moments where we had the moment where we thought we were going to lose Ricky. He was so sick and he wasn't responding to anything. And, you know, he had, you know, hyperkalemia, which is like a weird potassium disorder when he was 18 months old. And I'm thinking to myself, are you kidding me? He still has it. But it's gotten under control and he's slowly outgrowing it, so to speak. But, after the age of 10, 11, 12, it started to dwindle a little bit and not be as much and not have as many episodes. But there were so many times where he would be in a coma and we didn't know if he was going to wake up or if we were going to be planning a funeral. So I know that there are parents out there who have children with heart problems. And on top of that, well, they're diagnosed and they have autism or they have Downs or they have some sort of other, you know, mental disability. And then on top of it, like an internal health, something wrong there. Why? But if you don't cling to something of a higher power, it's, you're just going to send yourself to an early grave, which was where I was headed for so long. Cause I didn't want to live. And I felt like at one point I just wanted to die myself. And then you have to pull yourself out of that. You just have to. I'm not going to say have hope or chin up or anything. You have to. If you love your children, you have to do this for them. And that's where I went to. I got to that point of, I have to do this because there is no other option. I love my kids more than anything. And I want them to be successful and I want them to progress and do certain things in life. And if I didn't cling to something, I wouldn't even be here right now.
It's difficult when we talk about, you know, people that have some major struggles in life, people that have various disabilities and illnesses, and then they're the caregivers as well. And you wonder why. You know, you often get the question about, you know, why did this happen? You know, I asked the same thing when my son was young, like, God, why would you do this to an innocent child? And the one thing that I learned is that he owes me no explanation. I never got a response all these years. I never got a response, but my heart is softened. And as I look back, like, wow, he's protected us. He's brought us from this doom and gloom to this moment where we are today. And we're totally blessed. And, you know, although it's unfortunate, we've managed. And, you know, I thank God, because had my child been born to other people in my family or the responsibility of other people in my family, I'm like, oh my gosh,
they would have made it.
So
they never would have made it.
It had to be me. I didn't understand why it had to be me. I had no patience. I didn't understand it, but it was me. It was my journey. And I am grateful for where I am. You know, like I said, he doesn't owe me an explanation, but he's brought us through this time. And it reminds me of a quote that I put in my devotional, the She Exudes devotional. There's a quote in the devotion that talks about hope in the morning. The quote says, God didn't promise days without pain, laughter without sorrow, nor sun without rain. But he did promise strength for the day, comfort for the tears, and light for the way. And as I think about that, and I just think about what we've been talking about, he's done just that. Mm-hmm. Strength for the day, comfort for the tears, and light for the way. There have been a lot of tears. There have been a lot of things that I have been in mourning about, not just related to autism, but if you think about it, you know, I've been able to dry up my tears. I'm able to smile. I'm here today to share and give back to other people, other families. I met you and you have a book and you have a story to share and give back to other people. And so there's light. And the quote says, there's light for the way. We have a light. We sometimes have to strike it and make sure that's burning again.
And share it along the way.
Absolutely. But we have a light that we can share with other people whose light may be really dim. And so a lot of times, you know, I think about it as, it's unfortunate. I don't know why he picked me, but I can share and I can help someone else who's going through it. Because as long as we live on this planet, we're going to have to go through some hard times.
Yes.
And if I have figured it out in one area of my life, I'm going to share that and provide someone else with a little bit more hope as well.
That's exactly one of the reasons I wrote this book. I've talked to so many parents who didn't know which way to go. And I've spoken with so many therapists, teachers, professors, special education attorneys. And I've spoken to so many people who have, you know, more knowledge than I do. And I just absorbed all that and I'm using that. And I do say this for all parents out there, get to know your child's teachers, therapists, get info from them, know what your kid is entitled to. They just don't have this basic IEP. They are entitled to get these additional services. And if the district can't provide it, they have to provide it. Find another way to provide it. So, you know, so many parents, well, that's all they give. No, no, they can do more. And you make them. I fight for that all the time. I'm always fighting for that to get better and more.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point too. Especially if they're just kind of in the beginning stages of their journey, they may not even know what's available. You know, what resources are available, what they can add to their IEPs. Is there a resource that maybe you have used in the past that you could share?
Honestly, it's just a compilation of who works with my child. And I learn from them. So, you know, when it comes to their therapies and things, and they just want to give you the bare minimal, but you know that your kid is so low that they would benefit from more, you know, then Ricky went to another school and they provided that for him. So if you do have a child who is on the lower end of the spectrum, who is nonverbal, you know, whether they have behavior issues or not, you know, I know in Northeast Ohio, they have schools for that. They have a specific school for kids with autism that that focuses more on ABA therapy. Another one that focuses more on speech therapy. It just depends on your child. But when you know these things and you know that your child has the right to have that education, so many parents just don't know that. And I learned that through their teachers, you know, just saying, hey, do this with them, take them here. Here's, you know, here's this number, here's that number, here's this website. Here's a specialist I recommend. And I listen to them and I spend an hour and a half in their IEP meeting, you know, and I take everything in and I jot questions down. And I just, you know, I dove into my kids' education at a young, right from the get-go, you know, became PTA president at all the schools just to stay involved there and volunteer. And yeah, was it hard? Of course it was hard. You know, I had to work too, and I had to, you know, make it fit. But if you want it, you'll find a way. Otherwise, you'll make an excuse.
Absolutely. Yeah. I believe in advocating for your kids because you can't rely on other people to do it, unfortunately. You can't rely on the school system and, you know, other agencies to do it for you. They've got, unfortunately, so many other demands and asks. And so you have to do it for your child.
That's right.
So I definitely agree with that. Any other advice that you would share with parents who either are just newly going through all of this and, you know, feeling stuck, or maybe it's even a parent that's been through it for a while and she just really doesn't see, or he doesn't really see any light at the end of the tunnel. Any advice that you could give?
If it's early on, look for those special needs preschools that gives you, you know, Ricky was there at 3 years old and it was half a day, 4 days a week for just 3 hours. That was so vital to my sanity at one point. I was so grateful that I had found that. And, you know, you can search for these things within your district. Do they have one? You know, take it from there and then just kind of, you just keep learning. And that's all I did was just, I just kept digging for more. And I, you know, I found that for him. And then I found out after a year of that, that he could go, you know, all day. So then he went from like 8:30 to 1:30 or 2:30. So it was like a 6-hour, 5-hour day. And he loved going. He loved going. So I was lucky in that aspect, that all my kids have always just loved school. Thank God. You know, you just, you worry about things like that. Like, trust me, I've had my other battles, you know, but you know, you, so cling to those good things that you do have. With them. You know, if they eat healthy, cling to that. If you have in-laws or parents or siblings that are willing to help you, cling to that. I had nobody.
Right.
You know, I had no help and no support. Handful of small, but you can't burn those people out either. It's hard.
Right.
You feel guilty and then you're caught in that catch 22 of, I can't keep asking. I can't keep asking because you'll get burned out. My parents got burned out early. They did like 2-3 years solid. And then they just, it was a toll on their mental health and their physical mm-hmm. health. And, you know, they had to cut it back as the kids got a little older. And then I literally had no one after that. Mm-hmm. You know, so find the things that you can do, parent groups. You know, if you do find a daycare or if you have that support, cling to them, make the best relationship out of mm-hmm. that you can, and be grateful that you have it, because so many people do not.
Right.
And if it is that bad, get respite care. Know what you're entitled to. Know what your child is entitled to.
Yes.
There's so much out there.
There is. There is a lot. I would say, you know, in recent years, there's been so much, as we talked about before, so much awareness and so much growth. Mm-hmm. And so there are a lot more centers and a lot more therapies available than they ever were before. So definitely look into the things that are available for you in your local area.
Yes,
absolutely. It's absolutely correct. Tell us more about the book and where we can find it.
So Autism And, you can find it. It's on Amazon. I wish I could do the Audible, because I love listening to Audible books as well, just like you do. All right. I wish I could sit down with my book. And unfortunately, through, you know, learning virtually, my poor eyesight can't handle anymore. I wear glasses now for all of that. So I love my Audible books. I would love to make an Audible version. It just costs so much. Amazon has it, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million. Mm-hmm. You can find it almost anywhere. You'd have to order it. It's just not huge enough yet to be on a shelf one day, hopefully. I am working on my second book. You know, and I am already working on my second book. I wanted it to be out by April 1st, but unfortunately, you know, just being the mom that I am, it takes up 25 hours a day.
Is this going to be like a part two of this book?
It's kind of a part two. It's going to be called Autism and Love.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited about that one as well. It takes it in a different mm-hmm. direction. Mm-hmm. This is more informative and supportive, and mm-hmm. a little fun sarcasm in there. And, you know, Zach's college essay is in there. And if you got to read that. I was in tears and in awe of this child and his college essay, coming from, you know, a child that was nonverbal for so long.
Mm-hmm. Wow. You know, that's an awesome testimony.
It really is. It's one of the things. It's definitely one of the things that I have clung to that gave me hope, mm-hmm. you know, everything he went through. Now, mind you, remember, he was the one on the higher end of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. you know, he was suicidal and self-harming and nonverbal up until, you know, 6-7 years old. And, mm-hmm. you know, but he was mainstream and he made friends, and he has a group of about 4 or 5 really good friends, a set of twins that are mm-hmm. like his best friends. And I cling to them and their families, because they just accepted them as their own, you know, as their own and like their own family. And I love them for that. But, you know, just so that has all that in here. Mm-hmm. So then the Autism and Love is a little bit more heartwarming, faithful, give, you know, hope, and just a little bit more softer.
Okay. Well, they both sound great. And I will put the link in the show notes, the link directly to Amazon, so that you guys could go there and purchase it. And I just want to thank you once again for sharing your story. Thank you again for being able to give back and inspire other people. As we talked about before, that's what it's about. And so fortunately, you were able to find that glimmer of hope, and you were able to share that with others. So that's awesome. And I just want to remind people that the She Exudes devotional is available, and there are various scriptures with affirmations, and like the quote that I just read earlier that just talks about, you know, it really kind of puts things in perspective when you're looking for hope and you're thinking about, well, everything wasn't promised to be perfect, but here's a way that I can celebrate and appreciate what I have for today. So if you're struggling and just need something to center you, it's the perfect devotional for that. And you can find it at theconfidentlily.com. So again, thank you, Maria, for joining us. And until next time, everyone, be blessed. Thanks.
Well, that's it for today's episode. If you enjoyed the She Exudes Now podcast, be sure to subscribe and leave us a rating. Your comments are welcome as well. And be sure to check out the links in the description. Follow us on social media at She Exudes Now podcast and learn more about the Keep Exuding Sis group. Until next time, be blessed.